I shared a little bit of writing from Paul Tillich last week, and I want to start there again this week as well. And this is from The Shaking of the Foundations. Paul Tillich writes, "Grace strikes us when we are in great pain and restlessness. It strikes us when we walk through the dark valley of a meaningless and empty life. It strikes us when we feel that our separation is deeper than usual because we have violated another life, a life which we loved or from which we are estranged. It strikes us when our disgust for our own being, our indifference, our weakness, our hostility, and our lack of direction and composure have become intolerable to us. It strikes us when year after year, the longed-for perfection of life does not appear, when the old compulsions reign within us as they have for decades, when despair destroys all joy and courage. But sometimes at that moment, a wave of light breaks into our darkness. If that happens to us, we experience grace. After such an experience, we may not be better than before, and we may not believe more than before, but everything is transformed." As I spoke about sin and salvation, I did so from a very rational and humanistic perspective, which is how I tend to see the world, for better or for worse. And that is very much in the Unitarian Universalist tradition, which has strongly embraced humanism more than any other faith, short of actually simply being humanist. And I think that has been a great source of power and ethical living and principled approach to life in this world for us. But at the same time, I think there are some aspects of our Jewish and Christian theology that we have jettisoned too readily. There are some important ways of relating to life in this world that aren't immediately comprehensible by our rational minds. Indeed, I'm sure all of us have days where it feels like there may be no rationality at all in the world, that things are just crazy. And so I think we need to have some spiritual and emotional tools to go with our reason and our intellect. And so I want to talk about grace. Now, for Christians, grace is a gift from God. It is a gift that comes entirely from God's action for our benefit. We don't deserve it, and there is nothing we can do to earn it. And the promise of salvation, accomplished through the death and resurrection of Jesus, is the most important sign of God's grace. But grace is something that can come through our earthly lives as well. However, as Frederick Buechner, a Presbyterian minister and writer, says, there's a catch. "Like any other gift," he writes, "the gift of grace can only be yours if you'll reach out and take it." And so from my perspective, I don't really care where grace comes from, whether it's from God or not. I simply believe that grace exists. And as Tillich says, grace is something that strikes us and has the power to transform. And so what is that grace? And how can we be open to it? I want to start by telling a story from the Reverend Rebecca Parker. It's one of the most profound stories of grace that I ever expect to hear in my life. And it's told by her and Rita Nakashima Brock in a book they wrote together called Proverbs of Ashes: Violence, Redemptive Suffering, and the Search for What Saves Us. Rebecca Parker is now the president of Star King School for the Ministry, one of our two UU seminaries. and is one of our most gifted and influential theologians. But the road that she took to get there was a long and hard one. So about midway through the book, and the book is written in the first person, alternating between Rebecca's stories and Rita's stories, and Parker is recollecting a certain night in her life, one of the most important nights in her life. She was a young minister at the time, living alone in Seattle and pastoring a little United Methodist church. And she says she was able to put on a good face for her congregation, but inside she was struggling with depression, anguish, and self-directed anger. She writes that neither the pregnancy nor the abortion a few years earlier had saved her relationship or her happiness. Her abusive marriage was over, but it had brought her no relief. For nearly 2 years, she writes, night after night, I had been pacing the parsonage halls, caught in relentless rage and grief. One night, I came to the end of my will to live. I just wanted the anguish to stop. Her plan was to drown herself in a nearby lake. It was a clear, cold spring night, and she reasoned that she could walk in, swim a little, and let go. Sink down into the darkness and go home to God. She was resolved to this course and soon walked out her door. Only a small hill remained between Parker and the lake when she noticed something unusual, something she writes that looked like a long line of oddly shaped sawhorses. She couldn't see a way around either end, so she continued forward with the intent of crawling over whatever it was in the middle. But as she got closer, she finally understood what she was seeing. She writes, "The odd, bunchy shapes were a line of human beings bundled up in parkas and hats. The stick shapes weren't sawhorses, they were telescopes. It was the Seattle Astronomy Club." Before she could make her way through the line, one of them, presuming her to be an astronomer, beckoned her over and said, "Come here, I've got it perfectly focused on Jupiter. Come, take a look." Not wanting to be rude, she says, or give away her reason for being there, she took a look, and Jupiter was beautiful. That astronomer had no idea who she was or why she was there. But it didn't matter. What mattered is that she couldn't imagine killing herself in the presence of these people. These people that had just gotten up in the middle of a cold night to bundle themselves up and look at the planets and the stars. And it called to mind a hymn from James Agee that she had sung in her church choir. "Sure on this shining night of star-made shadows round, kindness must watch for me this side the ground. Hearts all whole, sure on this shining night, I weep for wonder." Now those astronomers in that moment of grace didn't automatically fix her problems, but it saved her life, and it created an opening through which a little more beauty could shine through. She says, "I began to feel more." And because she was open to it, open to this moment of grace, it turned her life around. Now, I will admit that I've had a hard time with this story because my outlook is so rational. I want to be able to explain it. But it doesn't quite work for me to say it's divine intervention. But on the other hand, coincidence just seems so inadequate of a word. And so I just keep coming back to the sense that maybe this is something that doesn't need a definitive explanation. Maybe this is just something that we need to accept, that grace comes from somewhere. We don't know where, but it offers us a possibility of transformation. Maybe it comes in words, maybe it comes in people. For Reverend Peter Friedrichs, it came from the beauty of the sunlight on the hills and the trees. What is probably my most important experience of grace came in the first year of my relationship with Mandy. So Mandy and I met at Unitarian Universalist Youth and Young Adult Conferences and had developed a very deep relationship despite living a few hours apart. But despite everything going pretty well, I could tell that something was holding me back. And really, I was held back because I thought that our age difference was too great. I mean, she was 3 years younger. Which, for whatever reason at the time, seemed like an ocean to me. Until one day. One day, I had this feeling that was so strong, like a neon sign in my brain that said, "You, Rob, are the only thing that is holding you back." It has nothing to do with the age difference. It has nothing to do with other people expressing concerns about the age difference, because no one was. It was all in my head. And I can't describe it as an epiphany, because I think that's too rational. It was just a feeling so strong and so sudden that I can't think of a better way to describe it than grace striking me. And thankfully, I was open to it. Because Mandy and I have been together for more than 13 years now and married for 8. And what if I had just closed myself off to that? If I had relied on the rational thoughts? Maybe we would have gotten there anyway, but maybe we wouldn't have. And what a shame. And so reflecting on each of these different episodes of grace, from Peter Friedrichs and Rebecca Parker's and the story, one of the common threads is that it almost always pulls the experiencer from a place of narrow vision, of tunnel vision, to a place where a much larger picture comes into view. Occasionally, it solves a problem immediately, but more often, it just helps us see a bigger picture and a way forward. Now, another common thread, and I do agree with the traditional definition, is that we cannot seek it out. We can, I think, take steps to ensure that we're open when it comes. The best way I can think of for us to do this is to remember that there are always more options, there is always more potential than our finite brains can comprehend. If we are struggling to remain open to this new life, there are countless ways to remind ourselves of the love and the possibility that is out there. Make an altar in your home with pictures of people that you love or things you cherish. Make a book or fill a bowl with poems and quotations that you can draw on when needed. Pray. Be with people. Stay open to the possibility. A few years ago, when a friend of mine was going through a hard time, her therapist recommended that every day she try to identify 5 beautiful or uplifting things that she had seen that day. It didn't matter how large or small, it could be a flower or a happy dog or someone that smiled at her on the subway. And she said, if 5 seems like too much, you can even go for 3. Whatever the mechanism, there are ways that we can remain open to this gift. After such an experience of grace, we may not be better than before, and we may not believe more than before, but maybe we'll be able to recognize grace when it strikes us, and everything will be transformed. Amen.